On a Saturday afternoon at a YMCA, just 15 minutes south of the U.S.-Mexico border by car, a group of teenage boys are playing their favorite songs and they're singing along. This YMCA looks a lot like YMCAs across the United States. A bunch of teens sitting around on couches, looking at their smartphones, playing video games on computers, watching episodes of Pokemon.
Pasaportes, por favor. Es un Pokemon.
And in the back of the room, a couple of the kids are playing Bad Bunny songs for each other.
Bad Bunny.
Bad Bunny, baby.
Rapera.
Tu mentira.
But this Y in Tijuana, Mexico, isn't just their after-school hangout spot. This is their home. This YMCA is a shelter for unaccompanied minors. Most of these teenagers are 1,000 miles away from their families. Some of the kids have been here for months since arriving with a caravan of migrants. After Daniel, a 17-year-old, plays Bad Bunny on his cell phone, he plays a song that he wrote himself. His song is about leaving his home in Honduras, and it's about his journey north with the caravan.
Hey, caminando, caminando, luchando y luchando, por ratos entrar y por ratos descansando, porque caminamos, caminamos.
In the first verse of his song, he raps about the day he left his home, crossing into Guatemala and walking 8 hours straight. Daniel, like most of the kids currently at this shelter, arrived at the YMCA last fall with one of the caravans of Central American migrants, the ones that were making all the headlines.
3,000 migrants from a Central American caravan have reached Mexico's border with Southern California. Thousands more are headed their way.
We're stopping people at the border. This is an invasion, and nobody's even questioning that.
Over the course of the last few years, the number of asylum seekers admitted to the United States has dropped steadily. But in the last few months, it slowed down to a crawl. At the port of entry in Tijuana, just a few dozen people can enter the U.S. and apply for asylum each day. This bottleneck has left thousands of people in limbo, including many, many families, and also unaccompanied children. And some of those children, like Daniel, have ended up finding their way to the YMCA. It's a place meant to be a safe haven for Daniel and other teenagers who don't have anywhere else to go. But a couple of months ago, it became clear that even the YMCA couldn't protect them from all of the dangers outside of the shelter's walls. From NPR and Futuro Media, it's Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. Today, we go inside the only shelter for unaccompanied kids in Tijuana. And we get a look into the daily lives of these teenagers as they wait for an uncertain future. Reporter Jesse Alejandro Cottrell is going to bring us the story now.
Okay, jóvenes, entonces, ella es, son unos amigos.
In the backyard of the YMCA shelter for unaccompanied minors in Tijuana, 30 or so teenagers sit on folding chairs listening to the shelter's administrator. He tells them that the women from the U.S. standing in front of them are their friends. He tells the teenagers that the women are here visiting them this Saturday morning to teach them how to box and also to alleviate their stress with massages. One of the women, Esther Calavid, the woman holding mitts, jumps right in. She asks the crowd, who knows how to box?
¿Quién sabe boxear?
The teens are excited to learn. Esther explains that she trains as a kickboxer. She says that while she's 60 years old, she can still throw a good punch. She punches the air a few times.
Estoy vieja, tengo 60 años, pero yo puedo. Yo sí les puedo dar, ¿eh? Okay?
Esther asks the crowd if they want to try boxing. Half the boys in the audience rush forward. The three girls who currently live at the shelter stay seated, even though Esther encourages them to join. On the whole, far more boys make the trip north by themselves than do girls. After a few boys put on the gloves Esther has brought with her, Esther has them form a circle around her. She puts on pads to catch their punches. The boys throwing punches are smiling, horsing around like teenagers do, showing off for each other. And according to Esther, this is kind of the point. She works as an activist now, but she also used to be a psychologist. Later on in the day, Esther will see a few kids privately to offer one-on-one psychological consultations. But first, she wants them to box, to take their minds off their stresses. She tells me that it's hard to think about your problems when you're trying not to get punched in the head. The average day for one of these kids revolves around three scheduled meals. According to the site's lead administrator, the kids don't have traditional school classes because of the difficulty of enrolling them locally, and because, prior to the arrival of the caravan, migrants only stayed at the shelter for 2 or 3 days at a time. Activities like boxing, the therapeutic massages, and others that happen throughout the week, like soccer games and art classes, are all taught by visiting volunteers and social workers. They seem designed in part to distract the kids from the fact that they're stuck on the same concrete lot for most of the day. The boxing is happening on one end of the yard with Esther. On the other end, Denise Chavez has set up her massage chair. Her massage chair is the kind that you lean forward into and put your face into what looks like a neck pillow. She's applying pressure to a boy's shoulders. Denise doesn't speak Spanish, so she asked me to translate.
Como, how do you feel?
Como te sientes?
Bien.
While the boy in the chair smiles and looks at peace, Denise says that he isn't fully relaxed.
If you notice his arm, he won't release it. And he's trying, but it just won't.
To make her point, Denise massages the boy's forearm, then raises his arm up. She releases it, but instead of falling back to his side, it stays stiff in the air.
These guys are in such a state of a sympathetic nervous system where it's you're in a fight or flight mode.
Tijuana is known as a destination for fun bars with vibrant culinary and art scenes. But although Tijuana has long been a crossroads for people between the U.S. and Mexico, the city wasn't ready for the influx of thousands of people late last year. Several thousand migrants were housed in an open-air stadium that grew squalid after rains turned the ground to mud. Tensions rose between Tijuana residents and asylum seekers, and locals marched to protest the migrants, chanting nationalistic slogans like "Mexico first" and "No to the invasion."
This is not the reception the asylum seekers had hoped for. Although some residents of Tijuana welcomed them with open arms, these anti-migrant protesters occupied a city monument Sunday.
Making the situation worse was the government's use of a practice called metering in Tijuana, limiting how many people could present themselves each day at the U.S. border to apply for asylum. While the practice of metering existed under the Obama administration, it intensified under President Trump.
This morning, the border battle intensified.
In late November of 2018, frustration with this slow process boiled over.
Entry between San Diego and Tijuana for a period of time, citing large numbers of migrants, some of whom tried to breach the fence, while others threw projectiles. In response, U.S. Border Patrol officers fired tear gas canisters at some of the migrants.
Migrants were frustrated not only by the wait, but by the insecurity in Tijuana. Last year, Tijuana had the highest murder rate in Mexico. As Denise is packing up her massage chair to leave the YMCA, she mentions how one of the boys took a special interest in her work.
So apparently there's an emerging healer here at the YMCA. His name is Alfredo, and he's been here about 3 or 4 months, and he was watching me so intently, and I saw him watching me, so I asked him if he'd like to try, and he took right to it.
Denise traded numbers with Alfredo and promised to send him instructional YouTube videos on how to massage. After Denise and Esther leave, Alfredo agrees to talk to me. Just to note that because of the dangers they face and their age, we're only referring to kids at the shelter by their first names. Most of the kids I approach at the shelter are happy to talk in public, surrounded by their friends. But Alfredo takes me to the Y's unused office, which is the only quiet and private space at the shelter. Alfredo says he's from Honduras. He's 17, but his beard makes him look older. One of his eyes is a little crossed, which he blames on a mugging he suffered at the age of 7. Alfredo's story is similar to what we've gotten used to hearing in the news. He says he left his country because there was no economic opportunity and because he received threats from gangs in his neighborhood. They wanted him to sell drugs for them. Alfredo says that because he refused to sell drugs, the gangs threatened him with violence. To avoid danger, he didn't leave his house. So last fall, when a caravan was forming in Honduras, he saw an opportunity to escape this danger. Alfredo's mom, who he lived with, was scared for him. He says it hurt his mom a lot that he had to leave, but she understood his decision and that for his own safety, he had to risk traveling north by himself. So she let him go. Alfredo says he walked north for an entire month with the caravan, catching the occasional ride, but mostly traveling by foot. He slept every night in the streets of whatever town the caravan was passing through, and it was hard to find food. Sometimes he ate, sometimes he didn't. And when there was food, Alfredo would have to wait in a huge line of more than 1,000 people. Approaching Mexico's southern border, Alfredo and a few others were separated from the main group of the caravan. This part of northern Guatemala is full of narco cartel activity, and when Alfredo reached this area, he says members of the Zetas cartel pursued him. Alfredo was with a group of 20 migrants when the Zetas tried to grab them. They ran as their pursuers fired at them. He thinks that they wanted to kidnap the migrants. Ransoming Central Americans back to their families has become a lucrative business for Mexican cartels. Alfredo escaped and rejoined the larger caravan. Eventually, he made his way to Tijuana, and after spending a few nights in an open-air stadium with thousands of other migrants, a friend told him about the YMCA shelter, which is the only one exclusively for unaccompanied minors in Tijuana. He says finding the place was a godsend.
Aquí me trata como en mi casa. Una dormida, un techo, pues, que no me está cayendo agua.
Alfredo says he's treated well at the shelter, as if he were in his own home. He's thankful for the roof over his head and the food he served. Nevertheless, he looks uneasy. When he's not talking, he wears a slight frown. His body is tense. He's nervous, like many other kids here are too. And that's because a couple months ago, while he was at the shelter, two of the teens staying at the YMCA were murdered.
When we return, what happened one night in December of last year, and how the shelter dealt with a tragedy it hadn't faced before. Stay with us, no te vayas. Got a song you want the world to hear? NPR Music wants to hear it. The Tiny Desk Contest is looking for the next great undiscovered musician. And you can enter by sending in a video of you playing an original song. You could win a chance to play a Tiny Desk concert and tour the country with NPR Music. Find out more at npr.org/Tiny Desk Contest. We're back. And reporter Jesse Alejandro Cottrell spent the weekend at a shelter for unaccompanied minors in Tijuana. There was a tragedy there in December of last year. He's going to pick up the story now, and a warning that this part of our piece includes descriptions of violence.
Mealtime at the YMCA is controlled chaos. Three plastic folding tables are set up in the middle of the communal living area, and a steady stream of kids sit around the tables, eating quickly so that others can take their place. Today, lunch is chicken soup and tortillas, with spaghetti served as an alternative. A red fruit punch is served in plastic cups. Keeping order is Minor Contreras, the YMCA's on-site administrator. He's a short, stocky man who used to be a professional boxer. His voice demands attention without being threatening, and the kids all seem to respect him, maybe because he so obviously cares about the place and about them. At lunch, he shouts to make sure everyone's got something to eat. After retiring as a boxer, Minor worked as an auditor. But living in Tijuana, he'd always see homeless kids on the street, which made him want to do something to help. So a little over a year ago, he took this job at the Y. For him, working with these unaccompanied minors is personal. When he was 9 years old, his parents had to leave him.
Mis padres a mí me dejaron con una familia porque tratando ellos de salvar mi vida porque ellos.
Minor says that his parents had to give him up to another family because they had problems. He won't go into much more detail. Nevertheless, not long after, he ended up on the streets, homeless. Minor says that the kids he made friends with on the streets used drugs. What saved him was his love of sports and boxing. Minor says that he knows what it feels like to be on the street and have nothing to eat. He knows what it feels like to sleep on the floor, and that's why he wanted to work with these kids. For the first 7 months Minor worked here, the YMCA served about 60 or 70 kids per month. But then that all changed. As the caravan arrived, suddenly the YMCA had to house over 140 kids in a space set up to house only 24. The main office space and event space were converted into dorms, and children laid side by side in sleeping bags on the floor. And the kids were staying for longer than usual. According to the Department of Homeland Security, unaccompanied minors should be processed pretty much immediately once they present themselves at a port of entry. But a study by Kids in Need of Defense, a nonprofit, found that after the arrival of the caravan in Tijuana, unaccompanied minors were regularly stopped before even reaching the gate at which they could surrender themselves to Border Patrol and request asylum. Instead, they were turned away or told to speak to Mexican officials. Migrants' rights advocates warn that preventing kids from applying for asylum put them in great risk because of the high crime rate in Tijuana and because children are more vulnerable to exploitation. Then, in December of last year, the worst-case scenario came true for the kids at the YMCA shelter in Tijuana. At 10 p.m. on December 15th, Minor did his nightly check to make sure that all the kids were present. Three boys were missing. This wasn't the biggest shock. Often the teenagers would leave the shelter without saying goodbye, only to call weeks later from somewhere else and say that they'd crossed the border or that they'd return home to be with their families. According to Minor, the shelter has no legal ability to hold them, even if they wanted to. That's what Minor figured had happened that night. He waited till around 11 p.m., then he left the shelter to walk to his nearby home.
Llegando a mi casa como a las 11 y media más o menos, que me habla el compañero Berna diciéndome de que pues había brincado una persona de los.
At 11:30, Minor received a phone call from one of the other employees at the YMCA who was staying overnight. One of the three missing kids had showed up. The kid was so scared to stay on the street that he jumped the high gate at the shelter's entrance to get in. His neck showed signs of torture, strangulation. He said that the other two missing kids were dead. There are various stories about why the missing kids left the shelter in the first place. Some of the migrants who knew them say that they wanted to visit their adult relatives who were staying at another shelter. Some say that they'd intended to try to make it to the U.S. that night. According to Uriel Gonzalez, the director of the YMCA who told me the story of what happened that night, the boy who made it back to the shelter said that the kids were en route to Benito Juarez, the open-air stadium that had become a shelter for migrants. He says the three boys were approached by a woman who called them cute and suggested that Mexican women would pay to have sex with them. She lured them to a room in a nearby apartment complex. After a while, two men showed up and locked the boys in the room. The men told the kids that they were going to ransom them to their families. When the boys said it would take several hours for their families to wire the money, the men began torturing them, tying wire around their necks to strangle them. Two of the boys died, but the third managed to get away. As soon as Minor heard the news, he returned to the shelter. By then, many of the kids were awake and out of their beds.
Cuando yo llegué, pues encontré a todos los menores en la sala, unos llorando, otros
Minor says that when he arrived, the kids were in the living room. Some of them were crying. Some were underneath tables, scared. Two of the kids had fainted.
Lo primero que yo pensé, dije, esto sí es doloroso, pero lo primero que yo pensé es en tratar de que los niños que estaban
Even though it was painful, Minor says that he had to focus on the kids in front of him and take care of those who'd fainted. It was a long night. In the days following, a lot of things changed at the shelter. The kids were only permitted to leave the grounds of the Y for 25-minute stints and only to go across the street to the convenience store. Any longer than that, and the staff would go looking for them. And the front gate, which had previously remained open throughout much of the day, was now locked at all times so that staff could monitor who came and left. A detachment of police officers was stationed across the street. Alfredo, the 17-year-old Honduran interested in massage, was at the shelter when the two kids were murdered. He remembers what it was like the following day.
Oh, fue algo terrible. Nos conocimos en este albergue y todos los que conocimos aquí somos hermanos.
He says that the aftermath was terrible. The bonds formed at the shelter are strong, and the teens consider each other siblings, no matter where they're from.
Todavía estamos con el temor y ahora no podemos salir. Si vamos al
According to Alfredo, before the murders, they felt safe. Now they're afraid that they could be killed too. Even going to the store across the street makes them afraid. The second day of my visit, Esther and Denise returned to the shelter. Esther tells me boxing went well, and while it was fun, the point was to relieve some of the stresses that the kids feel.
You know, when it's raining, they're stuck indoors, they're bored, they've been here for months. For their safety, they can't leave. And just added a little bit of excitement or activity.
A few minutes after they arrive, Minor accompanies Esther and Denise into the communal living room. It takes a moment to get the kids' attention. They're all watching a movie on TV, The Blind Side, featuring Sandra Bullock, dubbed in Spanish.
Ellas nos van a regalar a Casa Inca un equipo de masaje. Ellos se merecen un aplauso.
Minor announces that Denise is donating her massage chair to the YMCA. Alfredo stands next to Denise as she unveils the chair to the clapping audience. Alfredo is the one she teaches how to break down the chair and return it to its bag. All the while, Alfredo grins. At the Y, there isn't much space, there's never silence, and the high gates make it clear that there is real danger just beyond the property. Minor says that the shelter itself has received threatening anonymous phone calls from people demanding money to ensure the YMCA's protection. It's unclear how long kids like Alfredo will be here at the shelter, so all the kids can do is wait and hope the volunteer lawyers working on their cases will have news soon. On my first afternoon at the shelter, a visiting psychologist assembles a group of kids around her. She says that there's an imaginary hole in front of them. She wants everyone to loudly name something that they don't want in their life, then toss that thing into the hole. Then the group will shout fuera, or go away.
Uno, dos, tres.
Fuera, fuera.
Fuera. Y ahora que hay quien grita algo que quiera dejar en el hoyo.
The first kid says laziness.
Pereza, fuera. Fuera. Y todos gritan fuera, ¿va? ¿Qué más?
Then someone shouts, drugs.
Drogas, fuera. Los vicios, fuera.
Then vice, then bad thoughts, then the devil. Once everyone's mentioned the things that they want gone from their lives, the psychologist tells them to pick up their imaginary shovel and dig dirt onto the hole, burying their problems. The kids follow the instructions. Then moments later, the psychologist begins another exercise and soon has everyone dancing. But that imaginary hole in the ground, it's not big enough to bury the confusion, the fear, and the danger that they're living in, and that the U.S. asylum process isn't helping them escape. And whatever dancing and boxing and massaging they do while they're here, and however supportive the volunteers are, that hole is still there, in the backyard of the YMCA. It's a place that's nice, but it's one that the kids would rather leave behind.
Our thanks to Jesse for reporting that story. This episode was reported by Jesse Alejandro Cottrell and edited by Sofia Paliza-Ca. The Latino USA team includes Marlon Bishop, Miguel Macias, Antonia Cerejido, Maggie Freeling, Janice Yamoka, and Sayer Quevedo, with help from Maya Cueva and additional editing by Allison McAdam. Our engineers are Stephanie LeBeau and Julia Caruso. Our production manager is Natalia Fidelholz. Our interns are Caroline Aguirre and Lucas Southard. Our theme music was composed by Zenia Rubinos. And if you like the music you heard on this episode, be sure you stop by latinousa.org and check out our weekly Spotify playlist. And dear podcast listener, one more thing. We really love hearing from you. So keep your comments coming because we read them all very intentionally. And also, this helps other people to find us. So don't forget to rate and review us. I'm your host and executive producer, Maria Hinojosa. Join us again on our next episode. And in the meantime, look for us on all of your social media. Ciao. Hasta la próxima.
Latino USA is made possible in part by California Endowment, building a strong state by improving the health of all Californians. The Annie E. Casey Foundation creates a brighter future for the nation's children by strengthening families, building greater economic opportunity, and transforming communities. And funding for Latino USA's coverage of A Culture of Health is made possible in part by a grant from the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation.
We may be on the verge of another sexual revolution. In this one, we turn to machines for companionship and sex.
My main objective is to be a perfect companion.
How artificial intelligence and robots are changing the landscape of love, this week on Hidden Brain.